Here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Steven Serta, Cody Tapp, Alex Gold with you 10 to 2 here on 610 Sports Radio. Everybody back in maybe the somewhat normal groove today, back from the holiday, but still feeling a little bit different maybe to some extent when you're looking everywhere and it's Chiefs. I went out after the show, Cody, yesterday and went to a local store to get some more gear. I went and got the hoodie. I'm ready to go.
I can't believe you already bought that. It was already, so quick.
People were going on Sunday night, man.
How much did it cost?
$75.
Oh. Ryan, when was the last time you spent $75 on a hoodie? Look, man, respect.
50 years. Guys, it's been 50 years. I'm hoping it's not going to be another 50 before I need to buy one of these. And you're right. And Fesco pointed out, too, off air.
You're going to want the Super Bowl one.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm only buying this. This is all I'm buying for now. I'm waiting for the Super Bowl championship gear because I'll spend more of my money on that. If the Chiefs somehow lose, then I'll go back, and when the locker room shirts are cheaper, then I'll get some of those. But for now, I got the hoodie. I'm good to go. It's very comfortable, by the way.
It's a pretty dope design. I'll give them that.
It's the same design as the locker room tee, but just in a hoodie. Have you got any Chiefs gear yet?
Zero.
No, are you going to before Miami?
No. I mean, I'm not saying – I'm just not the same thing, right? Like, these are just differences, and I don't often buy labeled team apparel during this run until after. I'm not saying I'm a never guy. I'm just saying I'm a like after the fact guy.
I normally agree with that if your team consists, like if you're a Patriots fan, you're not buying AFC championship shirts. You're buying, sure, Super Bowl stuff. Like if we get lucky enough around here where the Chiefs are going to multiple Super Bowls and
probably
things like
not
that.
Buying
like
AFC
next
champion.
Year, if next year if we're in the same spot here, probably not buying an AFC championship shirt. Probably waiting for the Super Bowl stuff.
Yeah, and that's reasonable. When it's 50 years, I'm not. Again, no judgment.
This thing's going to get plenty of use. I might just wear this. I might just wear it till Miami because I'm definitely not wearing this down in Miami. It's going to be a little warm.
That would probably be overkill. Nice.
Might be sweating it out.
Should have a T-shirt for that one, but also,
yeah, you know,
maybe some 610 gear while we're down there.
You can always interact with us here on Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclynn.com at 913-576-7610, and over on the Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line 69306. We mentioned the Patriots there, and for the last, six-plus years, I feel like the conversation around the Patriots has always been about Brady and Belichick. Brady and Belichick, who gets all the credit? And in fact, the conversation is probably brought up more today even and over the last couple days, because now that the offseason has begun for the Patriots, trying to figure out what's going to happen for Tom Brady and his future. Is he going to stay in New England? Is he going to go elsewhere? And that brings up the conversation yet again about who gets more of the credit. All right, someone's got to get the credit. Who gets more of it, Brady or Belichick? That's not a new conversation. So here in Kansas City, now they're on their way to their first Super Bowl together, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. 2 years as a starting quarterback, who gets more of the credit right now? Who do you break it down to? If you're going to break it down to a percentage, where are you at when it comes to Reid and Mahomes? And for me at this point, and it can totally shift, I'll give you this, it's going to totally shift depending on what happens in the Super Bowl. Because for me right now, it's like a 65-35 in favor of Patrick Mahomes, if not 70-30 in favor of Patrick Mahomes. And I feel like that is where a lot of people are at because of the infatuation and love of Patrick Mahomes right now. If they go and win a Super Bowl, maybe for me it actually balances out more, believe it or not. If they lose and Mahomes looks great, and he doesn't, as you said, he doesn't have bad games, if they lose, then I think it could actually shift even more in favor of Mahomes than Reid, because people say, oh, Reid would be 0-2 in Super Bowl. So for me right now, heading into the Super Bowl, it's 70-30, 65-35 in terms of the credit on the QB versus the quarterback.
I think it depends on how you look at it. And the fun part about that conversation is we spent all of those years when it was Andy Reid and Alex Smith here. And Alex Smith had the best years of his career here. Lots of quarterbacks have had the best years of their career under Andy. Obviously, Mahomes has, although he's never had any other, you know, coach in the NFL, so that doesn't tell you anything based on that. But it's, when you start breaking down the percentage of what it is, I think if you would ask this question when it was Andy and Alex Smith and they were going to playoff runs and Alex was having the best year of his career, people would have told you 70-30 Reid. 70-30 Reid.
Maybe more, man.
And I feel like people might now be in the conversation of putting it 70-30 Mahomes. And I just don't think that's the split. That's not knocking what Mahomes does. He's a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. He has that kind of talent. We know those things. But that's a real disservice to the offensive design that Andy Reid has put in place, including some of the things like they have for the second consecutive year led the NFL in yards per separation. Some of that is skill, the position players that they have, you know, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and some of that is design. You get separation by design, by scheming people open. When they're 15 yards open, that just pushes that number up and up and up. And so when I actually start thinking about the percentage between the two, I think it's more like 50-50. I know that sounds low. Everyone's like, that's lunacy. But that to me, when I say that, I think they're the perfect pair. I think what it is Patrick Mahomes is great. And Andy Reid is great at making him great. And when I start divvying up like the responsibility of who gets more credit, I don't really feel like I lean towards one guy deserving more than the other. Because I don't think without, you know, like obviously I think Patrick Mahomes is still great without Andy Reid. But I think Andy Reid has proven he's great without Patrick Mahomes. And so for me, those two kind of coincide between the numbers. I know people want to lean, like we asked two people in the newsroom, and I think even Ryan, it said 70-30.
People are going to lean with the quarterback, especially early in the career, which sounds the opposite of what it should be.
No, the questions with Brady got like further and further. People slid that number further towards Belichick
the longer,
as time went on. Like, as time went on, it was more like, oh, you know what? I think it's 60-40 Belichick to Brady, which is crazy because Tom Brady's a Hall of Fame quarterback who's going to have more Super Bowl titles than any quarterback ever, and yet still you lean towards Belichick. I don't lean towards Reid. Like, if you made me choose a side, if I had to go 51-49 on another side, I'd go towards Mahomes because having an elite quarterback will always make those things easier. And Andy's never won a Super Bowl without Patrick Mahomes. He hasn't won one with him yet, but he's never won one without him. And I just think that that number rides closer to the middle than I think maybe some people would put it.
Yeah, see, I would go like 55 Mahomes, 45 Andy, because I have zero doubts that Mahomes without Andy Reid would be a successful and more than capable NFL quarterback. But I think the level of greatness that he is at right now was made possible because of how great Andy Reid is. It's at least that early in the season, because I think that, you know, the big narrative around him coming in was, you know, he's got all the tools, but he's going to be a gunslinger. He's going to throw picks and he's going to do all that stuff. I think the year of him sitting helped him learn how not to do that stuff quite a bit. But that was also Andy Reid's plan for him. And the fact that he doesn't throw interceptions now, I think that's something that's Andy Reid giving him the opportunity to show him how to make decisions at this level and how to process things and how to do all that stuff, because it's without a doubt, Andy Reid has made every quarterback he's ever had better in some possible
sure.
way.
Vic was better.
He
Paul
has
was
maximized
better.
Every quarterback that he has ever had. And now Patrick Mahomes has the ability to not only be maximized by Andy Reid, but he himself can maximize everything that Andy wants to do. So they complement each other in a lot of ways. So I'm not just going to give all of the credit to Mahomes. If he continues this in the Super Bowl, what he's done this postseason, I think that number would change for me a little bit, where maybe they start slow and he's just like, all right, screw this, I'm going to go win myself a ring, and does what he's been doing. Sure. But I think to this point in his career, you have to give that credit to Andy Reid for making him who he is right now.
Look, I'm not giving it all to Mahomes. I still said 65-35. It's not like I'm going crazy. I think there's some people out there who would probably willing to go 80-20 or 90-10. That's crazy to me. 65-35 is not everything you said. I agree with for the most part, but I also say, and I just saw the highlight of it again on NFL Network here in studio, that run. Like, after I saw that run for 27 yards, you know how hard it is for me to not give a majority of the credit to Mahomes? Like, everything you said is accurate. Sitting out for a year. Alex Smith maybe deserves some of this credit as well, honestly, if we want to give him like 2% or 5% of it on this chart.
Well, right? We start divvying up pies, and we really got to have a longer conversation.
Yeah. But like, so Alex Smith gets some credit there. Certainly the situation Mahomes has found himself in is unbelievable. There's so many quarterbacks that would have loved coming out of college to have had a year behind Smith, to had a year with Andy Reid before, to have these weapons. Nobody's debating that. I just look at as we all realize, the natural ability. When I see that 27-yard touchdown run that him and Lamar Jackson are the only two guys in the league probably making and is an all-time NFL play, that just puts him over the top for me when we're trying to divvy up these percentages. And I think if we do the same exercise, though, as I said, after the Super Bowl, if they win or lose, it's definitely going to change. Because if they win, I might actually bring mine down. I might actually bring mine down a little bit more toward Andy Reid. If they lose, to me, then my 65-35 is maybe even more justified in favor of Mahomes, because then the conversation is going to continue to be about Andy Reid, 0-2 in Super Bowls.
I mean, in particular, it depends on how that game goes. Like, it's hard to know how people's mindset would shift, win or lose, depending on, because Mahomes goes for 504 touchdowns. Whatever we ask people on this number, it's going to go up. And we'll take your opinions at the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 69306. Some people agreeing with Serta, 55-45, at least one from the 816, saying that, you know, neither would be in the Super Bowl without each other.
I agree with that.
It's the 24 part where I see why people end up putting a larger percentage on Mahomes. But that's where I kind of, it's the opposite of that for why I come back to the middle. It's what Serta had to say. It's that all I have is one impossibly long history of Andy Reid making every quarterback better that he has been around. The career years of players that have continued down that are constantly higher, always higher under Andy Reid. Alex Smith, Kolb, I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Matt Moore. Those might have been the best two games of Matt Moore's career. He played for Andy Reid this year. That's probably an exaggeration because he's certainly was younger and had a lot of starts there for a while. But he maximizes what a quarterback does. Again, the freelance stuff that you mentioned can't be ignored. Whatever Andy Reid does with, whatever Patrick Mahomes does within that is completely unplanned, unpredictable, unbelievable plays that only he can do. Nothing that Andy Reid has to do prevents him from doing that. But the interception stuff can't be ignored. The yards of separation can't be ignored. How perfectly Andy Reid's system has been catered to him. Like, that's another part of it. That's where credit starts to go. Andy is one of those coaches that will manipulate his system in a way that perfectly adjusts to his quarterback. That doesn't mean that Patrick Mahomes has the gifts to take advantage of it, because what Andy Reid has done is said, let's just throw all the time because you're Patrick Mahomes and this works great. And I didn't have a quarterback who I could throw it with. Like, sometimes you get guilty of trying to throwing it too much with a quarterback who shouldn't have been throwing it as much as Patrick Mahomes does. So obviously Patrick Mahomes does, you know, like I don't think I'd ever flip it on the other side right now, just because I've seen Andy been very successful with very good quarterbacks for a long time, but the kind of success they've had in these first 2 years hasn't been equaled since his 4 championship run time with that. And he did that without, you know, with a quarterback who's not going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Don McNabb was a very good quarterback. He's in the Hall of very good. But he's not going to be a Hall of Famer. Because I think if you asked Eagles fans who deserve more credit then, I wonder what the divvy of the pie is. It's so early, you don't necessarily have to do it. But with that conversation with Brady Belichick.
No, that's why it's fun. We're only 2 years into it.
Where were you at on Brady Belichick? I was always a 60-40 Belichick guy. And that's maybe that's wrong, but I just always felt like he was the greatest tactician in NFL history.
And at this point, I'm absolutely on the Belichick end of it. Absolutely. Now at the end here of the Brady-Belichick era, and I do think Belichick and Brady will be together next year. I think Brady ends up staying in New England. Absolutely right now, especially what we've seen with the defense year in, year out, revolving door really defensively for the Patriots, and they still are considered one of the best defenses, and Belichick and the genius he is. I absolutely would lean, I don't know the exact split, I probably would be at this point in his career.
50-50 is fine too.
I'd probably be at 70-30 is for Belichick over Brady. So the opposite of where I'm kind of at Mahomes. And that's something that, again, I think maybe will shift as time goes on when the big question a couple years from now, when maybe the weapons are not there for Mahomes, what does his numbers continue to look like?
This is an evolving line.
Absolutely. Again, over on the Smitty's Garage Burger Beer text line, 69306, someone says, Andy, 60-40. You have to consider, against all the pundits, Andy moved up to pick Mahomes. Patrick had talent. Andy fine-tuned him.
And that's, again, if we're divvying up other pieces of the pie, like how much, it gets to be a much harder conversation. And I think Mahomes' number grows because you start divvying up, like, front office versus. Like, for me, it's just, like, in the success that they have in this offense, how much credit does Andy get for the success that they're able to put together, and how much does Mahomes get? I know why you're at 65-35. I just feel like it's closer than it is right now because of how quickly he got him there. And that, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if Marina and Shula had this conversation. We were talking about the beginning of a first 2 year career. And I'm surprised. There's more people closer to 50-50 than I guess I thought it was going to be, just based on that. I know people are mentioning other players and other, you know, like, It's closer to 50-50 than I thought it was going to be. I thought more people be where you were. I thought more people just be like, it's Mahomes. But I think people see kind of the symbiotic nature of how the two of them have come together in what seems like perfect harmony. Andy Reid, as someone pointed out, had Favre in his early career when he was a coordinator back in his Green Bay days, and they would sling it constantly. I think people kind of thought that that's the kind of early career they expected out of Mahomes, and instead he's just been more efficient than that.
Coming up at 11:30 and 11 o'clock, I will have the forum. Kling and Banker are going to be in studio. We'll get their thoughts on this as well. Danny Welniak going to join us, KCB5 sports director, in the 1 o'clock hour as well. And I do think if Andy Reid loses his second Super Bowl and goes 0-2, I think we see these guys that are 50-50 right now, I think you see it go a little bit more towards where I'm at on the Mahomes route, because people start saying, oh, can he just not win the Super Bowl? People aren't going to look at it as Mahomes can't win it. They're going to look at it, Andy Reid can't get it.
Now, if you want to ask me on the other side, because this is essentially the analytics bowl, if you're saying what percentage I give Shanahan versus Garoppolo, 70% Shanahan, 30 Garoppolo?
Yeah, 75-25.
I'm not that high. I still think you got to play pretty good quarterback, and Garoppolo has done that. But I'm sure Serta's like in the same range as me there.
Well, there's recency bias, too. We just saw Garoppolo only have to throw the ball 8 times in a game and win.
Yes, they just won a game in which they only asked their quarterback to throw 8 times. So I'm like 70% Shanahan, 30%, because both of these guys are so great at designing things.
Yes. I think Jimmy's a fine quarterback, but he needs Kyle Shanahan. I don't think that offense would be anything close to what it is without him.
Like, what would Jimmy Garoppolo be with Bill O'Brien? Would he be Deshaun Watson's numbers?
Well, it's the same
thing
about...
Because that's about what he was this year, and my answer is no.
This is the same conversation people have with Goff and McVay, right?
Sure.
I mean, Jared Goff got the huge contract, went to the Super Bowl last year, but a lot of people still look at Goff and say, wow, without Sean McVay, what would... I mean, we already saw what Jared Goff was. I shouldn't say what would it look like. We know what it looked like. Now, Jeff Fisher was a big part of the problem, but like, we know what Goff looked like without Sean McVay. And so I think, yeah, that same debate. I think that is more probably for me, that's the comparison of what it would look like with Garoppolo without Kyle Shanahan. Well, to me, it's the Jared Goff, Sean McVay conversation.
And this is what's awesome about this upcoming game, is that we're going to get to look at two coaches who are excellent at diagnosing, specifically on offense. Obviously, the 49ers have a very good defense this year, too. But two coaches who are very good at taking care of people's weaknesses offensively. And so you're going to kind of get a firsthand look into this, because as we start looking at Andy Reid versus Shanahan, these are two coaches who I've put in the top five already. I put Shanahan in there, remember, before he got to the Super Bowl.
No, you didn't.
I told you early in the playoffs, I already felt like, because we ranked them in the wild card round. And I think I had Shanahan. I said, I already think Shanahan's a top five coach in the NFL. So I think this is going to be a chance to kind of see. It's like testing your merit. When you're saying, like, how can this play a conversation in this? This kind of becomes Reid versus Shanahan in a diagnosing matter because of the way that they use analytics and design in order to attack defenses. We're actually going to get to see a head-to-head, hey, who had the better plan? I wasn't worried about that versus O'Brien. I wasn't worried about that versus Vrabel. This is his first real challenge this postseason of that. And Vrabel's a good designer, too. He's fine. But he's not the way these two guys do it. Vrabel does it, like, a lot of their teams are just built on grit, which you can still do. And they still employed some of those tactics. But this is two guys who are as good as anybody at diagnosing this part of it. So you start getting into that head-to-head of, because Mahomes versus Garoppolo, I don't think anyone's taking
it's
Garoppolo.
Extremely lopsided.
In that matchup, Reid versus Shanahan, that's a matchup. That's the two great football minds going back and forth to figure out who can do better than the other.
Isn't that why I told you I wanted Green Bay, just from the historical significance of Super Bowl I and all that, but most people nationally wanted, once Lamar Jackson was out of the picture, right, and the potential matchups for Super Bowl, most people wanted Chiefs 49ers at that point because of just what you said. It's Kyle Shanahan against Andy. This is what people want. These guys get 2 weeks to come up with a game plan for each other, based off of analytics and everything else, with the talent that is on both of these rosters.
It's going to be fun.
Like, you know each coach is going to not... I'm not even just talking about, like, trick play type stuff, right? Because you know each coach is going to have something up their sleeve, to say
the
least.
No, just like the 49ers deciding they can run it 40 times.
Just flat out where they view there is the total strength in their mind over their opponent. It is going to be really fun to watch, which is why this thing has been sitting around a pick'em or Chiefs favored by one. It's going to switch, I'm sure, by the time we get to kickoff. Eventually, I think at kickoff, it truly will be a pick'em overall.
I'm so fascinated. I went back to their matchup. a year ago to try to figure out if there was anything like diagnosable. Now, you might remember that was the game Jimmy Garoppolo got knocked out for the season, but it was in like the fourth quarter. It was way late in the game. They had played a majority of it and pretty much had played even. And while you might go back and see like that 49ers team stunk, right? Well, they didn't. They stunk because C.J. Beathard had to like roll the dice for a while, and they weren't quite the defensive unit they were because
Nick Mullins.
But they were better. They were still a pretty good offensive team. Those first when they were going into that was a 1-1 49ers team, and a 3-0 Chiefs or a 1-2 49ers team and a 3-0 Chiefs team. And the 49ers actually had played like a murderer's row schedule, and it actually played okay, I thought, during that stretch. I tried to even go back to figure out if I could do anything, and it was like the same thing. Garoppolo threw way too much because the Chiefs got way ahead, and the 49ers had to come out of that. So the situation's all the same. Get them out of their game, and you feel fine. Garoppolo, when he had to throw, was 20 of 30 for only 251 yards. No, he didn't have any turnovers. Yes, they still ran the ball really well because Matt Breida went 10 carries for 90 yards. So I still think, going into this, that Shanahan's going to be able to design some run plays that work. I have no, like, more so than I even felt worried about Derrick Henry, because essentially they just said, this is what we're going to do and there's nothing you can do about it. And eventually the Chiefs did something about it. The 49ers don't exactly tell you this is what we're going to do. They do it in a lot of different ways. They carry the ball a lot in that game and eventually had to turn it over to Garoppolo when they got down. I don't know if that means that the Chiefs have to start fast, but even just going back that far, when I'm trying to design how these two coaches did it, they both designed perfectly executable offenses against it. Because even though the Chiefs, you might think, hey, they had Kareem Hunt in that game, so they must have run the ball well. No. 18 carries for 44 yards. That is a Damian Williams stat line if I've ever heard it in this postseason.
Neither of these coaches.
And Mahomes still went for 314 and 3. So I just think that, diagnosably, these two teams can still do a lot offensively against each other.
Neither of these coaches are going to be predictable. Neither of these coaches are going to be shut down. These teams are going to get theirs. They're going to get the better of each other at times throughout this game. Come down in Miami on February the 2nd. I don't know how much. It'd be an interesting question to ask Andy Reid. I'm sure he'll be asked about it as this week and next week goes on. But just how much can you? We're trying to look at a quick look at.
We were trying to look at Texans and Titans from earlier this year. And sometimes they're like, yeah, and man, now, you can't pay attention to that.
And now we're trying to go back a year before that. And just look at the roster. I mean, Mostert just had 200-something yards rushing this past week. In that game, he had one carry. Right? I mean, Matt Breida was the leading rusher at the time for the Niners. George Kittle, yeah, he was the leading receiver, but they also didn't have a Deebo Samuel on the roster yet. They didn't have an Emmanuel Sanders on the roster. They certainly didn't have a Nick Bosa.
But forcing them to throw was still the choice.
Oh, clearly. And clearly, the 49ers don't want to throw the ball, we think, at least heading in. Now, it wouldn't surprise you. I know they threw 30 in that game, but they don't want to based off this past week, back past two playoff games. I gave you the stat yesterday. Mahomes has more second quarter passing yards than Jimmy Garoppolo has in the entire postseason.
Second quarter
alone.
Not half.
Yes.
Quarter. Yeah. A quarter.
That just tells you where things are at. But as we say that here, watch them come out throwing the ball like crazy against the Chiefs. And that may be what the Chiefs want to have happen. But that wouldn't surprise you.
Wouldn't do it. Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise you one bit if that's ultimately where things end up. Coming up next, your chance international cash contest. Cody will have a code word for you. We're back at that today on Cody and Gold. And we'll look at Chris Jones and multiple players on this roster. What a Super Bowl appearance, and let alone maybe a win, could do for their future, not only with Kansas City, but in the National Football League.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Cody and Gold, presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com, our national cash contest. Cody's got your next code word.
1,000 on the 30s. Text the code word PACK to 72881. The Packers aren't in this anymore. That's why you'll only need PACK, P-A-C-K, be the $1,000 winner in our national cash contest. We already had a $1,000 winner here on Cody and Gold, and we want another. The 610 Sports Radio is the only sports radio station in Kansas City, giving you a chance at $8,000 each weekday. Just listen on the 30s from 8:30 to 4:30. Next chance coming up at 11:30. Complete rules at 610sports.com. Remember, we already had a $1,000 winner. That person still hasn't revealed themselves to me so that we can score a free lunch.
That's what you're really game planning for right now, I feel like.
Also,
you just
we
want
need
that
to
lunch.
Stick the text line on the people on Twitter for our barbecue from Texas. Because all they right. Still haven't paid up, and they have since beaten the Titans.
We need to know how we approach this. You guys can give us some advice, because we've called them out on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We were nice. We've been very patient. Very nice about this. We know that Houston sports right now is an absolute mess between the Texans and the Astros stuff and the Rockets even and everything. But it's been 2 weeks, okay? It's been about 2 weeks. We're getting ready to go to Miami on Sunday morning. This needs to get here before Miami. They're hoping we're enjoying this ride, which we are for the Chiefs. Now, we're just going to magically forget about that crappy Texas barbecue compared to KC barbecue. No, we still want it. In fact, at this point, why don't they just go ahead and Venmo us some money, and we'll order some KC barbecue. They don't even need to send us any Texas barbecue.
Really? That's fine. Just tell, look up whatever their Twitter handles are and just tell the text line, 69306. Just go bother these people on Twitter.
That's probably the best route for them, just to harass the at Sports Radio 610 is the station down in Houston.
Yeah, go bother them and tell them we want barbecue.
Needs to happen. Reminder, we're in the middle of 50 hours for 50 years, still going strong here on 610 Sports Radio as the Chiefs are headed to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. And this game obviously has huge implications for the city, for the organization, and for legacy of multiple guys, not just Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but also what this roster could look like next season. Chris Jones, all season long and last offseason, wondering if he would get a new contract for Kansas City. And it's not just Chris Jones, but I think he's the first guy that people start with, right? And it is his performance this past week through injury, major impact, what he potentially does in a Super Bowl. How does that play a role in his future in Kansas City and potentially the kind of money that he would garner if he goes out and adds a ring, and more than adding a ring, if he's impactful in the Super Bowl? And if you're Kansas City, I think it's a tough spot to be in, because we see organizations all the time in all sports. Someone could have an unbelievable postseason run. You still have to make that tough decision to part ways with them. Like you have to separate the unbelievable achievement, if you're able to win a Super Bowl or just get to the Super Bowl like the Chiefs here, and separate still what your, don't let that overshadow what your initial thought was. Like whatever Kansas City's thought around Chris Jones had been a week ago, 2 months ago, 6 months ago. To me, to some extent, I don't know. You got to be careful about letting these last couple of weeks, unbelievable weeks, overshadow what your thought process was from a business standpoint. I know from a fan standpoint, it's easy to look at what Chris Jones is doing. You say, you got to keep the guy. Find a way to keep the guy. I don't care what you have to do. That's not realistic all the time. You have to make tough decisions, guys that were key parts to championship runs at times, and you have to sometimes make those tough decisions. This will be one of them. I don't think Chris Jones, now being in a Super Bowl, Chris Jones, well, who knows what kind of performance he's going to have in the Super Bowl. I would imagine he's going to be impactful. But I don't think that changes the way the Chiefs approach the offseason with him. And I've told you, we all had this discussion. I felt like the Chiefs, beginning of the season, was one of those where I'm like, got to find a way to keep him. I don't think they will keep him. I said that preseason. I still feel that's how this will trend, whether you think it's going to be a franchise tag and trade type of deal. That's where I'm at still with Chris Jones.
I was there. I felt like, based on what I had seen with the Chiefs, they certainly didn't seem like they were moving towards an extension all that quickly. So it didn't feel like something that you could really count on as being the case, especially when they signed Chris Jones or Frank Clark. It didn't feel like there's money for two defensive players making $100 million on one roster. But I do think you should factor in what he does in the playoffs, because that tells the whole story. You need to know the whole story about a player if you've waited this long. There's no reason to say how we felt about Chris Jones at the beginning of the year is how we should feel about him now. Hell no. If I waited this long, I might as well factor in the rest of the 12 months of evidence I have, including the rest of the time in the Super Bowl, factoring in. I'm not saying one game should determine that. Let's say a la Malcolm Butler, right, and the fans that would have called for him for one play. But it's not one play for Chris Jones. He battled through injury to make an immediate impact in an AFC title game that helped secure them to the Super Bowl. If he goes back out and does that in the Super Bowl again, this is just continuing to put more evidence on the board for why the Chiefs should find a way to make this work. And I understand how difficult of a cap situation it is.
That's what it's all about for me.
To keep two defensive players at that price tag. But for me, the thing you need to think about a defense, instead of saying, I want an impactful person on the line and in the secondary and at the linebacker unit. No, you already have impactful players. Just choose the ones that are impactful. It doesn't matter how many you have at each position. I watched the Eagles, for instance, just a couple years ago, win a Super Bowl with an impactful defensive line. The rest of the defense wasn't bad. It's not that they didn't have good players and other things, but they had several high-priced players all loaded up on a defensive line that carried them to do it. And if there's a place where I'm going to spend a whole bunch of money all combined, I'll do it there, because it's the first line of defense against anything. pressure up the middle, right? The one thing anybody will have a conversation about on how to stop a quarterback. I think the Chiefs probably don't change their mind on this. I don't know that I've swayed in thinking that the Chiefs are going to change on what side of this they land, but they should consider this. They should consider, not saying they should change their opinion on how much they want to pay or what position they want to pay him at, but what he does in the postseason does matter. Not that it matters. It's only part of the story. It's 5% of a 95% story, and they shouldn't treat it as it's weighted. It shouldn't be a weighted percentage, but these are three games, right? The one he missed and the two that went behind it, right? Like, it's not that. It's not weighted. It's not like they count for 50% because of these two games. No, they count as two games of 18 that he played this season, or two games of 14 he played this season, or two of 19 that he should have played and three he didn't. Like, they should all count towards the same number, but they do have to matter. And in the end, it's still pretty obvious to me that they're, like, I know we talk about Matthew and Clark, and that should matter. Chris Jones is an equally impactful player on the field as those two are.
Just yesterday on the show, and I want to make it clear as well, I think we're all in agreement. If you can make it work financially, it's a no-brainer, Cody. Like that, I don't think it's as much as me saying here that, oh, the Chris Jones isn't a huge impact player that you wouldn't want to keep him. Of course, I think everybody sees that as the obvious part there. To me, it's just I don't know with what's coming for Mahomes. We all know that ridiculous contract that's gonna be $40 million a year on average is what most people suspect. Plus, you still have some other guys in the secondary. Whether you're gonna address that in the drafts, you're gonna have to look at the secondary going forward as well. You know, at the wide receiver spot, what you just got done with Tyreek Hill, that's already done. I understand it. You're gonna free up some money from Sammy Watkins. Like, there's money to move around, but unless you are going to feel like you can truly do this all through the draft, when I'm talking about in secondary more than anything else.
Yes, because you're replacing Breeland and Fuller.
So are you confident that you're going to be able to fix that almost immediately through the draft? And that's my concern, and that's where I'm looking at long-term is the best route. As weird as it is to say, when it comes to Chris Jones and the impact he's had on the defensive line, and you're absolutely right, you got to start there and get pressure on the quarterback. At the same time, sign and trade. Get a couple picks. You trust Brett Veach over the last couple of years, especially this past draft, what he's been able to do in terms of evaluating talent and also just through the waiver wire going out and getting guys that were on the street literally. Like, I wonder if that is not the better route long term. It sounds great and all. Sign Mahomes. Sign Chris Jones. Do that. They're your best player, potentially your best players on the team and all that. 100% in agreement with that. I just don't know if that is the right strategy to go with when it comes to the other areas that need to be addressed. And he could go and have three sacks of Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl, and it could be the final sack of the game. And I know it's gonna at that point in time, everybody's going to say, do whatever you can. You're going to have to lock him up. I just don't think that's how you necessarily will operate.
But this is the same thing. If we do it this way, if you're saying get picks and then take a cornerback to fix a different problem, this is the exact same thing I made fun of the Raiders for. We're going to trade Khalil Mack, get these picks, trade up, take a Bosa type to hope to have Khalil Mack.
Yeah, but they had more holes. They had more holes, though.
I know, but to hell with that. Like, if you have great players, keep great players. That's if he's a really good player, move on. If he's a really good player, yeah. Rather than pay him $100 million, and that's a difficult line to diagnose for yourself. It is. I'll admit, as a GM.
Is there anybody in the league paying $100 million to two guys on the line?
Hell no. There's not. But that's
a problem.
But is there another team in the league that has two top what? Oh God, Frank Clark, it's so hard to diagnose based on his year.
The back half of the season you would like to think.
Top 20 defensive line players in the league on their line.
Well, the Niners, but
they have a rookie.
The only one they're paying is D Ford currently.
Yes, but if they had to pay Nick Bosa this year, would they?
Well, yes, he's an absolute star.
Obviously, they would pay him. Like, it's just like all we're arguing is timing. It stinks. It stinks that the timing is they've already paid Frank Clark and it's time to pay Chris Jones.
Bosa's probably going to be defensive player of the year.
But they didn't have a top five pick to take Bosa. So what you do instead is, if you have an elite player at an elite position in Chris Jones, I think you just pay him.
Well, but so let's say the Niners did want to pay Nick Bosa this year. They did a really good job, in my opinion. One, I mean, it helps that they thought they had a barring injuries last season, they were like,
yes,
we have a good roster. Mm-hmm. We know we have a good roster. We have faith in that. And they went out and they made the moves to make them a Super Bowl contending team. Obviously, it worked out really well. DeFord's contract is big, but it's not like crazy. Like, they could get out of DeFord's contract. So they did themselves a lot of favors because they're like, well, we have to pay Eric Armstead. We have to pay DeForest Buckner because we might not be able to afford these guys. Oh, and Nick Bosa is better than both of those dudes. So we're definitely going to want to keep him at some point. But they gave themselves a lot of flexibility with DeFord's contract so that they can do the things that they need to do here in the near future. I don't think that the Chiefs really did that with Frank Clark by making him one of the top five highest paid pass rusher in the NFL.
After 2021, so one more year of Frank Clark, his dead cap hit then becomes $10 million, which is the almost identical number they ate on Eric Berry, which to me means you can get out. You save. If you chose to cut him that year, you would save $14 million in 2022. You would then save, if you chose after 2022 to do it, $22 million. So really, they're in the same situation. They're only on the hook for Frank Clark through next season. Like, in my mind, $10 million is not a dead cap hit you definitely want to take, but it's not any more or less expendable than DeFord's contract, depending on the time you have to pay Nick Bosa. It's maybe a year longer in the tooth. The Niners are in a better situation, but again, the Niners are only in that situation because the Chiefs were in the AFC title game last year, and the Niners got to pick, what, third or second? Like, I mean, it'd be nice to be in that situation and not have to pay him. But the Niners will run into issues with paying guys, too.
Well, what's Garoppolo
at? I just don't want to, like, trade assets to try to find other elite players. And Brett Veach has done a really good job, and I trust him to do that. The question only for me lies in the, do you think he's really good or great? And if he's great, you pay him.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line, 69306. This from the 816. Can't you argue Sammy is that important, too? I mean, a guy that's been clutch in all of our big wins. That's just going back to the argument I think that we were making about Chris Jones and what he's been able to do here, even in the postseason as well, and where we look at the Sammy Watkins contract, and a lot of people at the time, for the most part, it's, oh, that's a terrible contract for Kansas City, but when they've needed him in big-time games, right, he's stepped up.
Yes.
Wide receiver versus impact defensive lineman.
But it's not like that for Chris Jones. He's just been great every time he's been in
there. He's been great, and it's a lot harder to find. It's easier to find wide receivers, especially when you have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid to put them in positions. And again, it's not – Sammy Watkins has been incredible in the postseason, but Chris Jones, it's a lot easier to find Sammy Watkins than it is the next Chris Jones.
But if Sammy Watkins were a top five wideout in the NFL like Chris Jones is at his position, and they were already paid Tyreek Hill, and they're like, oh my God, are they also going to pay this other top five wideout? Yes! Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just don't – like. Hunting for, like, I think you let go of Breland's and you let go of Fuller's and you let go of sometimes what are good players on good teams and even really good players on good teams sometimes. It's that line between great.
And I don't think Chris Jones were in it. Nobody's concerned. I certainly am not concerned that a year or two from now we're going to say, oh, he's heading the opposite.
Injury would be your only concern. That position, people get hurt there.
Right. I wouldn't say he's heading in the wrong direction, but we look at the Patriots and what they've done throughout their history. They've gotten rid of guys, traded them, or just didn't sign with big contracts at the right time. And I'm not suggesting that Chris Jones, again, is going to fall off a cliff or anything. But they have not paid the guys, right? They really haven't. They haven't really paid the guys that big deal. They've moved on at almost the perfect time every single time for the most part. And so if you're Kansas City, I think that has to be something that you think about as well.
Should have paid Chandler Jones. They just let him go and solve their problems. And Chandler Jones has been one of the best pass rushers in the
there's
NFL.
More of the other example for New England, though, than the Chandler Jones example, you're correct on that, but not on the other guys.
Yeah, for me, it's all about deciding if you think they're great. That's really where it lands for me. And all of this is like, obviously people are going to be talking about weapons because we mentioned Sammy Watkins and all the things that come into that. I understand where you have those conversations or you mention Watkins or you mention Hill because what makes a defense great or an offense great is having weapons around it. Because even, you know, we were, you know, before the show, we know that Stephen A. was saying that Mahomes is only great simply based on the fact that he has elite weapons around him, which to me seems kind of like lunacy.
Those brothers that he's throwing a football to, Aaron Rodgers has those weapons. What's he going to do? Let's go back. Let's go old school. Pick any quarterback. Troy Aikman's a three-time Super Bowl champion. He ain't never had weapons like this. Okay, he ain't never had weapons like that. Dan Marino with Mark Super Duper and Mark Clayton. And as electrifying as those dudes were, he didn't have the multitude of dudes that Travis Kelce has at his disposal. Dan Fouts with Kelly Winslow. Mahomes, right? Then you got Dan Fouts. He had, who did he have? He had Kellen Winslow Sr. He had Charlie Joyner, those boys. He didn't have that available to them. I'm not talking about one or two guys. You're talking about a tight end. You're talking about three different wideouts. You're talking about guys catching the ball out of the backfield. He's got weapons all over the place with the play calling ability of an Andy Reid. I'm going to tell you that Patrick Mahomes is great, but my God, is he helped.
So that was Stephen A. on First Take, and to me, it's fairly laughable to suggest, not necessarily that Alex Smith could get to the Super Bowl, but that Mahomes is doing this because of his weapons. Alex Smith, other than Hardman, essentially, wasn't even in the NFL at the time. That roster offensively is really almost identical for the most part, other than, oh yeah, Alex Smith also had a better running back. I mean, it's laughable to me to even suggest.
I don't think it's laughable to say that he could get to the Super Bowl.
We saw it.
He got to the divisional round. He never got any further than that. So it's probably not, it's a bit of a stretch.
Down 10-0 to the Titans, down 24-0 to the Texans. You're certainly not feeling good in those scenarios.
Like, I don't understand why we knock people for having talent around them. Why is that a knock ever? Jimmy Garoppolo has plenty of talent. The only tight end who compares this year in the NFL and over the last couple years in the NFL to Travis Kelce is on the flip side of this, and Kittle, and Emmanuel Sanders is going to go down as having a really, really good career. And all those other names he mentioned, like Clayton and Duper, both had 1,300 yards that year. And I don't want to hear anything about like Tom Brady when he had Randy Moss. And nobody was talking about like, oh, how great he is finally now that he has weapons. They were just talking about how they were an undefeated team at that time. It's ridiculous to put any kind of punishment on a player for having that. But that, it cycles back into that conversation about who we give credit to a little bit, too. I just think when I look at this, I don't think it's just that. I don't think it's just that they have great talent. I think you've just seen a massive upgrade since then. And Rodgers has had great talent at quarterback, and yeah, he made it to the Super Bowl like you're supposed to do. It's like we're saying, oh, if you had all this talent, they'd be in the Super Bowl, too. Well, that's where Mahomes is. And when Tom Brady had elite talent, guess where he was? The Super Bowl. He also is one of the greatest head coaches of all time. He also had the number one rated defense, according to DVOA, in the NFL this year. What if Mahomes had that? We'd be talking about ring two, not one. We'd already be like, yeah, they got one. Mahomes is going for two. If they had the Patriots defense of either of the last 2 years. Like that conversation is just one of those like, it's fine. Like,
weapon thing is silly because it is just what if you, and that's why, and I'm side with people on this when you hear stuff like that from Stephen A. It's like, how much are you really watching? If you're watching Patrick Mahomes, whether it was just, even if you just watched last weekend, let's say you didn't watch a single game this year of Patrick Mahomes, and you just watched last weekend, is your takeaway really that he has amazing weapons? You watched that 27-yard touchdown run, and your takeaway from that game is going to be, he's only doing it because he has weapons. Not the unbelievable ability that he has on a 27-yard, like that is an all-time run for any player, let alone a quarterback.
Sure.
Then your takeaway is he has too many weapons? That's ridiculous. That's one play, and there's been 10 or 20 of them in 2 years already for him.
He has a talented roster around him. There's no denying that about Patrick Mahomes. Kelsey's a top two tight end in the NFL. Tyreek Hill's a top five wide receiver in the NFL. Although, it's funny.
Doesn't Dak Prescott have talent around him? Doesn't
Watkins Dak? Is always a problem around. Of course they do. Yes.
Doesn't Baker Mayfield?
Yes.
Okay, exactly. So that's why that argument from Stephen A. is just ridiculous.
It just matters. Like, it's all of that kind of stuff going in cohesion that kind of adds to where they are, just generally speaking. I feel really good about where they've been to this point.
Last minute. Last minute.
That whole argument's stupid. Yeah, it's his fault. He's got good weapons. Get out of here.
He should try it with
everybody else better. Hugh Jackson wants to get back into coaching, and he doesn't think that he should be judged for his 3-36-1 record during his time coaching the Cleveland Browns. Hugh, you should absolutely be judged by your 3-36-1 record. You are statistically the worst head coach that has ever lived. What makes you think you shouldn't be judged by that?
As a head coach, what else are we supposed to judge him on? You stunk as a coach. You mentioned his record there, Serta. What else are we supposed to judge Hugh Jackson on? That's exactly what I'm judging a head coach
on. How many weapons he has. Yeah. We judge how many weapons he has. Yeah. We judge nothing else than that. He was stuck with Terrell Pryor, so he's fine, guys. He's off the hook. Don't worry about awful. Those three wins. It's fine.
He's awful. It's no, fine. No. I'm not here for this little sob story from Hugh Jackson. He's been making the rounds for the past year as a consultant, doing the NFL's bidding, trying to make people feel bad for him like he didn't get a fair chance in Cleveland. No. Coaches, inferior coaches all the time try to do the best with whatever the hell they have. They don't go around and make excuses and try to make everybody feel bad for him. I don't feel bad for you at all, Hugh Jackson.
Flores took over a worst five team in the NFL the year before, then got gifted Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think we'd probably argue a worse quarterback than Baker Mayfield. And that all he did was finish with more wins than Hugh Jackson had in his entire run with the Browns.
And a division still with Tom Brady and the Patriots, despite them being down this year, is still a team that won 12 games. Oh, yeah, and your organization as a whole was in the middle of a season tried to tank and trading away Minka Fitzpatrick, yeah, and one of your best players.
Judge, I know I just got busted with five keys of coke, but please don't judge me for the 19 other charges for drug distribution I have.
If Hugh Jackson is wandering around on Radio Row trying to make people feel bad for him, I think we should have him on the show. I'll tell him what I think of that record.
Done. He's never coming on again after that. Ever.
That's fine.
Do you think Hugh's going to be around trying to just find a gig? Where is he actually at? Is he still just doing the consultant stuff?
Yeah.
Because was it Marvin Lewis was hanging out with Herm Edwards over in Arizona for a while, Arizona State, trying to get a job there, or had a job. He was on the staff, something like that.
He was just going
to
beg, borrow, and steal. You know it.
The secret weapon for Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. We've seen it here, we think, on the backstretch of the postseason. And what can we learn from the 49ers' losses this season?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.